You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here today for our final mid-month book news check-in for the year 2025. Rira, we've made it to almost the end of the year. There's only two-ish weeks left.
Yeah, true. I don't know if you saw the news today, but apparently America is doing a Hunger Games, like, for real.
Like a what? Like we're a sanctioned death game or like some sort
of
Eurovision
a sanctioned death
thing?
Game. So there's this video that's being passed around online of like Trump doing his speech and he's saying like, oh, we're gonna do an unprecedented 4-day like athletic event where we have one man and one woman from each state and territory participate, and it's going to feature like the greatest high school athletes in America, and like everyone is like freaking out because they're like, what in the Hunger Games is this happening? Like, and he's calling it the Patriot Games too, so it's like this
Patriot
is weird.
Games sounds just like a death game. Like, this is
exactly
like...
So we're just like, why are we doing this? Who let him watch the Hunger Games movie before bed last night?
I mean, this is just like bread and circuses, right? This is just distracting the populace with sports when shit's going down. And like, you know, there's been a lot of distraction this week, but you know, we're not a political commentary podcast, although we do commentate on political things because
to be fair, Hunger Games is a book, so it's tangential.
Reading is political. Stories provide points of views to help us better, you know, formulate our own points of views. And as we've learned time and time again throughout this life, if you have a point of view, you have politics.
Yeah. Also, it is National Twins Day. So,
oh, is it?
Yeah. So happy National Twins Day to your twins, Marvin.
Yeah, I'm going to go give them both a high five when I finish this recording.
I received your Christmas card with like your twins meeting Santa for the first time. And I was like, oh, it's so cute.
It went just as well as you would expect. My son did pretty well. My daughter, though, she did not trust that sus old man. You know, she was definitely not happy to be left on his lap.
It's a man dressed in all red and like a big bushy white beard. I can see why she thinks he's sus. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got our first holiday card. I think for our Patreon supporters, I'll shoot you guys a copy of our Santa pictures because it is very cute.
It is very cute.
And I guess speaking of our Patreon supporters, this podcast is supported in part by our listeners over on Patreon. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you can access to our members-only Discord server where you can talk to us and fellow book club members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a patron's choice book club pick once per quarter. And our upcoming January pick will be a patron's choice. So if you join now, you can put in your vote to choose what book we read to kick off 2026.
And I think you gave out a prompt, Marvin, for our 2026 January pick, like any book that you guys were meaning to read, like, you know, knock it off your bucket list. So if you have any that you would like for us to read for book club that you've just kind of been like, oh, I haven't had the chance to read this yet, or I've been meaning to read this and I just been putting it off. Now is a good time to pitch those books to us.
Yeah. But with that, let's kick off our mid-month episode, as always, with our final roundup of upcoming publishing announcements of books by Asian and Asian American authors. You know, it is the end of the year, so I feel like the announcements are, you know, slowing down a little bit. Everyone's going on holiday, but there are some cool stuff coming up. So Rira, why don't you start us off with our first book deal?
All right. So our first book deal is Hogarth 1, North American Rights to Light and Thread by Han Kang. The Nobel Prize winner's first book of nonfiction, published in English, is an intimate, inspiring collection of Han's writings that illuminates the connections between her life and art, and will include her 2024 Nobel lecture. The book was translated from Korean by Maya West, Yi Ye-won, and Paige Anya Morris. Publication is scheduled for March 2026.
So Hong Kong's a name that's been on my, like, I should really read a book by her list for the longest time.
So Han Kang is the author of The Vegetarian, which is, you know, what most people know her through. She's also the author of Human Acts and Greek Lessons, which are like very notable books as well. So we do have like a couple of books that we could pick from her. But I'm pretty sure you're thinking about The Vegetarian, because that's like the first book that kind of blew up in the English publishing world.
Well, I feel like just any book. I feel like she's a author that I'm, you know, we don't have to pick the popular one. We can pick one of her, you know, lesser known, but also probably pretty good entries. I've heard her style is pretty interesting, right?
Well, I've only read The Vegetarian, and it's kind of hard for me to say because, you know, like it's being translated. So I don't know if the prose is like reflective of like the actual Korean prose that she wrote.
Yeah.
I do want to like read it in Korean just to compare, because I did hear that the translation really condenses a lot. So I don't know. It would be nice to compare the two texts.
Yeah. So it sounds like this this release will be a collection, kind of like a short story memoir collection. I feel like we've read a couple of those before, right?
Yeah. But it's always interesting to hear how an artist like gets their ideas and how they like develop it into actual like concrete, like tangible art. It's always interesting to get into an artist's mindset. So I do want to pick this up.
Yeah. Well, congrats to Hong Kong and to all of her translators for the book deal. All right. Next up, Flatiron preempted North American rights to When We Swallowed the Sea by Janet Hong. The literary translator's debut novel is a contemporary Korean family saga narrated across three generations and centers on a young woman from a long line of Hanyo forced to leave home after a tragedy shatters her family, as well as her decades-long search for belonging. Publication is planned for May 2027. So, Rira, are you ready for another multi-generational Korean family epic?
Always ready, and I am glad that Pachinko has paved the way. I do love how we are getting more stories about like Henyos, who are like the mermaids in Jeju Island, who it's like these women who are now, you know, elderly, but it's a woman profession where they
are the divers. Right?
Yeah, these are the divers who don't use any equipment, and they just, you know, have lung capacity for days and go collect seafood that is actually like really difficult to collect and quite dangerous. And yeah, it's like it's pretty cool that people actually know what henyos are nowadays, thanks to like documentaries. And also there was that really famous IU drama, When Life Gives You Tangerines. Like, they mention henyo like quite a bit because it takes place in Jeju. So yeah. All right, next up, Simon & Schuster's imprint Sarah Barley Books acquired Limitlessly Mina by Gianna Lakanoth, a middle grade novel in verse about a Guyanese American eighth grader from Queens whose life is turned upside down when her nani, the pillar of the family, begins to lose her memory from Alzheimer's. Publication is slated for spring 2027. So Guyanese is a part of the Indian diaspora where they have relocated, immigrated to South America. I forgot which part of South America, but it is a very interesting part of the Indian diaspora that we don't see represented quite often.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like a broken record on, because every single one of these mid-month episodes, we do reiterate that it's really cool to have, you know, books for young readers that show different sides of the Asian diaspora, because, you know, the aftermath of colonization, of migration, of, you know, like human trafficking of like the past few centuries has led to you know, all of these different forms that the diaspora can take. And books like these are important not only for members of this community to be seen, but also for those of us who aren't familiar with these communities to be aware that they exist and they have lives and they have struggles and they have their own, we have our intersections, but they also have their own unique culture. And, you know, I personally was not familiar with the Guyanese diaspora, but now I know.
Yeah, just to like clarify to people, so like Guyanese can refer to like people who are of Caribbean descent, indigenous descent, Indian descent, but considering that the author is Indo-Guyanese descent, I'm guessing that her main character is also of that heritage. So that is just like a guess, probably a good educated guess, but I am glad that this book is talking about like how young people can grieve and deal with grandparents who are going through Alzheimer's, because that's not easy for anyone in the family. And it could be like so heartbreaking and so confusing for someone so young, being like, why does my grandma not know my name? Or like, why can't she remember that we've done certain things? So I'm glad that this book explores that journey, because it's so hard. And I'm sure that there are kids out there who are dealing with that right now, and they could use that representation.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Candlewick has bought an exclusive submission, Take to the Sky by Christina Suntornvat. Set in the world of A Wish in the Dark, the middle grade novel tells a story of three unlikely friends, a bird, a boy who used to be a bird, and a boy who may or may not be a prince. Together, they traverse the mountains of northern Thailand to fulfill their destinies. Publication is set for spring 2027.
We've read A Wish in the Dark, and we've had Christina on the show to talk about it as well. So yeah, this is finally a sequel, spinoff to the book.
Yeah, I think it's like a follow-up. It sounds
a companion
like
book.
A companion book. Exactly. Like, it sounds like a book that's set in the same world, but features different characters. And, you know, I remember being really taken in by the magic system of A Wish in the Dark. And, you know, we love a good story about hidden identities.
Yeah. And A Wish in the Dark was inspired by Les Miserables. So I wonder if there are some other like classical literature that's like hidden as gems and Easter eggs in the companion piece. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yep.
All right. Next up, Beaming Books bought world English rights to Not Again, Dragon Chen, written by Amanda Adams and illustrated by Waza Pink. A picture book about a boy and his imaginary dragon's tantrums and their journeys to learning how to navigate big emotions. Publication is slated for fall 2027. This would be perfect for your kids, Marvin, as they navigate big emotions and deal with tantrums when they turn 2 years old.
Yeah, I mean, they are both dragon babies. They're both born in the year of the dragon. And, you know, they're about to turn one, and I'm beginning to see some big emotions start to bubble up. My son especially has had a couple, like, I don't know if they're full-on tantrums, but he has been very upset, especially when he sees me leaving.
Oh, he's very attached. People complain about the terrible twos, but I honestly think the worst, not the worst, but like the most difficult age is like leading right up to two. Because that's when they can't really talk, but they have the big emotions and they want to communicate, but it's like coming out as like gibberish, and like you both get frustrated because you're like, what do you want?
Yeah, I've definitely had a couple moments where I'm like, okay, I'm running down the list. You're not hungry. You don't have a dirty diaper. So you're upset about something that I cannot figure out. And usually it just turns out he just wants to be held. And he wants
me
to stand
up. He's a Velcro baby.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And when you get this book for your kids, I should be like, not again, Dragon U.S. Okay. Because you have two kids. Yeah.
I am excited to get to the point where I can read to them and they actually listen. Because right now, when I try to read to them, they just want to eat the book. So we're almost there. We're not there yet. Yeah. And this book coming out in 2027, it's perfect time for me to pick up for my kids. But yeah, congrats to Amanda and Waza Pink on their book deal. All right. Next up, Crown Books for Young Readers has bought Ellen O's YA novel, Jin Young in Between. The book is about two star-crossed lovers trapped in parallel worlds and the lengths they go to be together, even if it means the undoing of their own worlds. Publication is scheduled for summer 2026.
We love seeing Ellen Oh on our roundups.
Yeah.
She is one of the founders of We Need Diverse Books. And speaking of Ellen Oh, I wanted to include this in our book news portion, but I could not find like the source. But she had posted on Threads about how she was kind of baffled that people were being mad at a Korean American author who was complaining about a white author who was kind of pretending to be Korean to write K-pop inspired fanfics. I mean, might as well have been fanfics, but like K-pop inspired fiction. And I was like, okay, who is this? And I was like trying to find who the actual where the source came from, and I could not find it. So
I do remember there are some like either Book Talk or Bookstagram like kerfluffle following K-pop Demon Hunters, where I think an Asian author or an Asian bookfluencer preemptively pleaded for white authors not to do that. So maybe was it connected to that?
I don't know, but I do remember seeing like screenshots of some of the prose in these books, and it was just not it was not good, you guys. And like people were also complaining that there was like the usage of like real K-pop stars' names in this book, and it's just like, why are you doing that? Do you want to get sued? Yeah, but like from glimpses I've seen from this conversation, it was just real bad. And I really wish we could have discussed it more on this episode, but unfortunately I did not have enough sources. But Ellen Oh, so glad that she called yeah. out problematic behavior, because yeah, what are people doing yellow face and trying to write about our culture and trying to capitalize on it?
I mean, K-pop has a lot of clout right now, so when you have clout, you inevitably have clout chasers. So it's just the name of the game, unfortunately. But this new book sounds really cool too. I love that Ellen. I always forget that Ellen Oh's like bread and butter is in speculative fiction, because I mainly know her as like the We Need Diverse Books person.
Yeah, her last book that I remember seeing, was it Spirit Hunters? Let me look. Yeah, it was Spirit Hunters, and it was a middle grade horror mystery series. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, speculative fiction is kind of her bread and butter. And I do love stories about parallel worlds, so this sounds really fun.
I mean, and also two star-crossed lovers whose love will destroy their own worlds, you know? Leave it to young love for people to do the dumbest things, right?
Yeah, it's also giving me a lot of like Doctor Who vibes, like the 10th Doctor and Rose, for those of you out there who were on, you know, who are in that fandom in the early 2010s. But congratulations to Ellen.
Yeah.
Next up, Page Street acquired Monica Chin's debut novel, Don't Print This. This queer YA mystery is about a boy who becomes entangled in the murder investigation of a local reporter in order to rebuild his relationship with his best friend, who also happens to be the reporter's son. Publication is slated for fall 2026.
I mean, assuming he wants to be more than friends to his best friend who just happened to lose his mom.
I do love the title, Don't Print This.
Yeah.
That already sets the stage for conflict. So yeah,
conflicts of interest.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on record for loving and good, you know, all sorts of mysteries, you know, cozies, noir, just classic whodunits. So yeah, this sounds like a really cool, you know, it's always a great idea to mix your murder investigation with personal relationships, right?
I mean, like, can you imagine though? It's like you had a fallout with your best friend, and it's like, oh man, I'm sorry that your dad got murdered. And it's like, how do you rebuild your relationship from that? It sounds like a lot to work through. So
yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of plot that will be delicious in this book.
Sounds like a lot of fun. So congrats to Monica on her book deal. All right. All right, next up, Godwin Books has acquired world rights to A Super Definitely True Story of the Great Animal Race by Dane Liu, illustrated by Aki, which is a cheeky picture book retelling the Zodiac Race folktale in which the rat who won the race sets the record straight by retelling his version story in which the Getsy rat helped all the animals stand up and fight back against an evil jade emperor. Publication is slated for fall 2027. This sounds like a lot of fun because in the actual folktale, the rat kind of
cheats.
Doesn't cheat. I mean, he does cheat. Does he cheat? I don't know.
I mean, he doesn't technically cheat, but it's a very underhanded math a method. What was it like? He rode on top of a cow.
The original story, yeah, original story is the cow, the cat, and the rat are all buddies, and they decide, okay, we're gonna go 1, 2, and 3 together. And then at the last minute, the rat kicks the cat off the cow, and that's why the cat is not featured in the 12 zodiac animals. And you know, right before the end of the race, the rat jumps off the cow and finishes first. So yeah, not exactly a clean win, but it's also kind of a fable of why cats hunt mice.
Really love stories that are based on like the Zodiac tales. Yeah. I mean, like Fruits Basket is like the most iconic one that I can think of right now.
Yeah. And as someone born in the year of the rat myself, I'm all for rat redemption. Also, are we sure he's a rat? He could be a mouse.
Isn't it a rat?
Yeah, because in Chinese, the rat and the mouse it's kind of the same word. Like laosu, that could be a mouse. And mice are cute.
I mean, either way, rodent. So,
yeah. All right. Well, add this to the list of books I can share with my kids in 2027.
It's the year of the horse, right? Because it was the year of the snake, and I remember that because we read a book in January about snake sisters.
It's snake, yeah. It's let's see, Sunyo Hutu Longsa Maya Hoji Gotu. So,
it is horse.
Next year's horse. 2026 is horse, and 2027 is sheep or goat or ram, however you, whatever. It's another word that can mean a lot of different animals. I think colloquially it's the year of the ram, right?
I guess so. I mean, like in Korean, it's yang, and yeah, that means sheep. That's not really goat, but anyway, neither here nor there. It's going to be the year of the horse. All right, so our final book deal is Quill Tree Bought Foreigners, the next YA novel by E.L. Shen, a multi-generational family saga in which a young immigrant woman's secrets in the 1960s have shocking and reverberating effects in the present day. Publication is planned for fall 2026. We've had E.L. Shen on our show before to talk about her book, The Queens of New York. Which was kind of like the sisterhood of the traveling pants with like Asian American best friends, which, you know, I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
She also wrote The Comeback back in 2021, and it was about a figure skater. And I'm like, this is my book. This is my jam.
Yeah. Just a seasoned author of YA girl coming of age stories. And you know, I do love that this is our second multi-generational family saga. I think this time, based on the description, I want to say it's a Asian American multi-generational saga.
1960s. What happened during that time period in Asian American history?
That is the time period of the Immigration Naturalization Act. A lot of people came to the States. That's when my family immigrated,
yeah,
to the States.
Yeah, you're correct. That's when like a fresh wave of immigrants came after that act got repealed. I'm guessing it has something to do with that if we're going by history.
Yes, yeah, so always cool to see, you know, personally always good to see immigration stories that map more closely to my own family's wave of immigration as well, because Asian American immigration is all about waves. Like when your family came here has a lot to do with the type of American experience they have. So, you know, it's always cool when those experiences line up closer to my own experience as well, because, you know, sometimes you do want to feel represented, right?
Yeah, and I feel like we're right on like the money when it comes to like this particular point in Asian American history, because the book is called Foreigners. So yeah. I'm guessing that these women who are immigrants, they are being seen as the enemy, as foreigners. So, I mean, that's just a lucky guess. But congratulations to E.L. Shen on another coming of age novel. Okay, so we are going to move on to book news. And to be honest, we don't have a lot. However, a big discussion topic that's been happening every single year, and it happened again this year. People are talking, complaining, debating about other people's reading goals. And this time it kind of blew up because of a book talker. So I'm not going to name names because obviously, you know, I don't want people to get lynched in the online communities. But if you guys like want to know more details, I'm sure you can find it. So a specific book talker made a video, and the video had like the text, "Me getting on Book Talk only to hear people legitimately say their reading goals is 100 books a year," in all caps. And there were a lot of comments, and one comment that kind of like kickstarted this shitstorm was an author, actually. So it was an author who commented saying, "Don't get them riled up. They'll come for you. They are either one, literally reading all the time versus any other hobbies. Two, stay-at-home moms who audiobook a lot. Three, students. Four, jobless. Five, neglecting something in their lives. I found it's nearly impossible to hit those numbers if you have a full-time job. Also have other hobbies. Also have other obligations. Also have a social life. Also exercise. And live a balanced lifestyle. Something's got to give." And of course, the backlash came in hard because, like, I just feel like lately reading has kind of been demonized as like a performative hobby. And because there's a lot of like talks about like anti-intellectualism these days, like people are just like, oh, there's no way people can read that many books or whatnot. But actually, people do. And I don't understand why like people are getting upset that other people are reading more than you. It's not a competition. It's literally a leisure hobby. And I think it's really scummy to put down people who read as a hobby as like people who have no social lives, because that's obviously not true. And there's nothing wrong with being a stay-at-home mom who audiobooks. That's how a lot of people get their reading done in between chores. Audiobooks are considered reading. It's reading that is made more accessible to people. People read during their jobs. A lot of jobs have downtime. So like a lot of these are, I don't know, just not true. And a lot of people on the internet are also like on my side on this, maybe they read more than you because they read more than you. Some people read more because they don't scroll, or, you know, they just read faster. Like it also depends on like what type of books you read. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I am amazed. I'm more amazed at people who can read 100 books in a year, because, you know, I feel like we read a lot for this podcast, but I understand that, like, you know, one or two books a month, you know, if you're a true reader, is like a leisurely pace, right? I don't know. I feel like it's never a good idea to disparage a ton of people on the internet with like generalizations. Like, that's, you know, you're just asking for, like, it's just not a nice thing to do neither. Like, you know, everyone has their own. Like, if someone has a goal of 100 books a year, all power to them. And books can be, like, you know, novellas can be a book.
Also, like, 100 books, like, people think that's a lot, but it really isn't. It's reading, like, 2 books a week. And considering that, like, an average novel is around, like, 200 to 250 pages, it's, like, it's it's quite doable, especially when you have like, you know, downtime at work or you're reading before bed. And I don't know, like, I really don't like this idea of shaming people for spending all of their time on their hobbies, because we don't really say that about people who crochet or people who binge TV shows for like 2 weeks. Like, it's just like, why are you criticizing someone on how they use their leisure time? And also, reading is a really good hobby because it helps like stimulate your brain and also prevents it like slows down Alzheimer's. Like, it's been proven in a study. It helps people be, like culturally aware and political. It depends on like what they read too. So it's just like, I don't think 100 books is a lot, but I'm also saying that as someone who has read 100 books a year in my life. Yeah. This time around, not so much. This time I think I read about like 40-ish books, which is not a lot at all. And really, like, if you listen to audiobooks as well, most audiobooks, like for an average 200 to 250 page novel, it's around 8 hours of listening time. So if you speed up your audio narration speed, that's like around what, maybe like 6 to 7 hours that you could like shave it down to. And it's really not that much if you listen to it throughout the day.
Yeah. I mean, the last few books that we've read for the book club, I've read through audiobook just because this is the only way I get any reading done, because I am one of those moms, I guess, who reads via audiobook at home. And, you know, I usually listen to anywhere between 2 and 2.5x, depending on the narrator. And those books typically is, 5 to 6 hours to complete. So that's like, that's an afternoon, to be honest. Like,
yeah, you only need to read 2 of those a week, every week, to reach like 100. Like, it really isn't that hard when you make it your main hobby. Yeah. And yeah, it's just like, let's not shame people for how they use their leisure time. And also, like, don't make reading into a competition. It's already being turned into like hyper consumerism with like all the like special sprayed editions, sprayed edges editions, hardcover editions. Let's not. There is a problematic part of like the bookish community, but it's not like how much time we read or how many books we read per year. It's not that.
So my question for you is, like, 100 books is, like, to me, it's a lot of books. Like, for me, it's hard to think of like 100 books that I want to read. So what happens when you start a clunker, right? Like, you know, because usually you can tell if a book is going to be like something you enjoy within the first few chapters, right? You get a sense of the prose, the vibe, the point of view, right? If you DNF a book, does that count towards the book count or no?
It honestly doesn't matter. Like, you can, no one is policing you. I mean, these people on the internet think that they're policing you, but really, like, you can do whatever you want with reading goals. I don't like putting a reading goal on myself specifically because it just causes a lot of unnecessary stress. And it's also like, you know, as it gets closer to the end of the year, it's like, okay, let me like read shorter and shorter books, and not necessarily like me picking them because I'm like interested in reading them particularly. So I don't know. And then there are also people who change their reading goals like throughout the year, you know, they'll be like, okay, I read maybe 20 books in the first quarter, but I've only read 5 books this quarter. So I guess I need to like shrink my expectations and so that they can meet their reading goal at the end of the year. So I've seen people who had 100 books as like their reading goal at the beginning of the year, and then they shrank it to like 75, and they're like, yes, I made my goal. Which is still impressive.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, you're not really competing, unless this is like a death game, right? Or this is like, you have to read 100 books or else you're penalized, or you read 100 books and you win, like, you know, free pizza for life or something.
I'm just saying that half of Americans read 4 books annually, or 3 to 4 books annually. I'm pretty sure that's what the most recent study said. And if you have been reading along with us, that means you've read 3 times as much. And that's just for book club picks. So really, any, like, reading any amount of books per year is considered impressive in this day and age because there are just so many distractions. So I don't know. Like, I think people should really calm down on. There's another thing that's been like kind of bothering me, where like people think reading is performative, right? And like I've been seeing a lot of like discourse on performative male reading, like men who purposely choose to be seen with quote unquote feminist books, so people would think that they are like, you know, dateable. And I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, can we just focus on books that we want to read, like personally, or to like challenge ourselves, and not use it as a prop to look smarter or to look cool or to be more dateable? I've also seen comments about people who are like who are saying like, oh, people who read at cafes alone are not actually reading their books. They're just doing it to look cool. Like, they're doing it for the aesthetic. And I'm like, I'm sorry that you came into this community late, but people actually do read at cafes and do read alone in public because they just want a scene and change, like seen in a change in scenery, or they're just trying to kill time. Like, why are we policing people like this?
I mean, I feel like this is more of a generational thing, and we're veering into like this type of conversation we typically have on Boba Chats. But I feel like it's third spaces, right? Place outside of home and work where you can hang out with friends or just, you know, chill, read a book, browse online, have a coffee. It feels like that's kind of like a millennial thing, right? And, you know, as with all millennial things, people like to poo-poo on it. But it really does feel like third spaces are, because I have noticed that some of the boba places I go to, they're getting rid of their seats. Like, it's only a counter now, because you go in, grab your drink and leave. And that's kind of the interaction there. So I wonder if it's like the concept of third space is just not as popular or familiar.
Yeah, maybe. Or I don't know. Like, I think with social media these days, everything is like so curated, and people think that you do that in real life. And I'm like, no. Like, I mean, I'm certain some people do that. Like, they like dress themselves, they act a certain way so that they come across as like this persona in real life. But chances are your persona is online and you just go about your life as like a real person during the day. The only times I like judge people for reading in public is like if the book that they're reading is particularly bad, or it's like, what are you doing reading A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara like on the train? Like, don't you know that it is a very depressing tome of a book? Like, what are you doing reading this on your commute? Do you want to like feel depressed for the rest of the day? But I don't go up to those people and tell them like, hey, yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah, you don't want to yuck someone's yum. So maybe they like to feel depressed on the train. Maybe it's just their vibe. Like, you know what would make this train ride more awesome is if I cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, people who read romance books, like, out in public. I feel like I've been seeing more of them because, like, I mean, I know there are complaints about adult romance novels having like cartoonish covers because people think that they're YA and they're not. They have like a lot of sex scenes. And it's just like, oh, I see people reading those books in the wild, and like no one knows any better because they think that they're reading YA or like some kind of romance book. But I'm like, I know what you're reading.
Yeah, but some of us know better.
You're reading Heated Rivalry. Like, I know.
I mean,
people,
it is
like,
a hot, like the TV show is pretty popular. So maybe, you know.
Well, it's popular. But like people who did not know about it before, like, you know, it just looked like a. Look like a rom-com book, right? But it's like, I know what you're reading. Like,
And then you give them a little nod, say, I'm on to you. And that's how.
No, we don't make eye contact. No, 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 no. We don't shame each other. We don't out each other in public. Just no. But yeah, it's just I don't go up to those people and say, what are you reading? Like, what are you doing with your life? Oh, it's so performative. Like, let's not do that to people. Like,
I mean,
I'm just glad that people are reading out in the wild, even if it's a Colleen Hoover book. Cause yeah. It's like
yeah, I mean, I think that's where we ultimately fall on. It's like let's not judge people for reading. And I think it's great to have people with grand reading ambitions. Like, go read 100 books. I hope they're all good.
Yeah, and also like it could be a very bad hobby. It's just reading. It's harmless.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
All right. I guess with that, that'll do it for this final edition of the Books and Bubble Mid-Month Book News Check-In for 2025. Thank you so much for sticking with us throughout the year and looking forward to all the great book deals coming up in the next year as well. And yeah, you know, if you listen to this and have your own reading goals, let us know what they are on Discord or Goodreads or wherever you want to reach out to us. Rita, before we call it an episode, can you please remind our readers what we are reading for book club this month?
Yeah, so we are reading Blackmail and Bibinka by Mia P. Manansala, and it is the third book in the Tita Rosie's Kitchen Mystery series. So we've had Mia on the show before to discuss her book, Arsenic in Adobo, and I really like that book. I love murder, so... So this was my pick for December because this actually takes place during the holidays. So a cozy holiday crime novel.
Just love what it. The doctor ordered. And we're having a great time discussing this book on our Discord. So if you are a Patreon supporter, be sure to join us on there to talk about Blackmail and Bibinka. As of today, we would have finished our read. So all plot spoilers are on the table. So I guess, you know, if you haven't finished the book yet, jump into discussion, jump into the Discord channel with caution, because we probably will be talking all about who the actual killer is. But yeah, looking forward to discussing with this with you, Rira, at the end of the month. But before then, wishing you a happy holiday season, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We've made it to the end of the year somehow,
and then it's gonna start all over again. Can you believe it? Wow.
All right, well, that's for future Marvin Reba to worry about. All right, well, thank you so much for listening to Books and Boba, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Reba Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former beer league player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.